One of the great things about working on the Bryant Park project was the collection of all the friends of the show, smart, savvy contributors who helped us understand the world around us. We had Jim Vandehei of Politico.com every Monday to talk about the election, the rejected New Yorker cartoon guy, Matthew Diffie, Jared Sandberg, walked us through office issues. He's with the Wall Street Journal. Lizzie Goodman of Blender and Andy Langer of Esquire steered us away from some scary music. Big thanks to all of them. And the man we turn to every week, the man we stalked at the Sundance Film Festival and even talked into guest hosting a couple of days, Daniel Holloway, our movie critic, joins us live in the studio. So good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for coming in this
morning. I thought
you
were going to leave me off that list.
And then there's Dan. Let's get right to it. Step Brothers, this Will Ferrell movie teaming up with John C. Reilly. They were in Talladega Nights together. That was when they were actually kind of, well, they're funniest, maybe.
Yeah, maybe they were peaking then.
I don't know. My question about this movie is it's about two sort of grown-up guys who find out they hate each other and then they love each other. They're half-brothers. Does Will Ferrell show up for this movie? Because he owes me money from Semi-Pro.
He
sort of phoned it in.
He owes a lot of people money from Semi-Pro. Right?
So does the funny, full-fledged Ferrell show up for this film?
There are two kinds of Ferrell.
Okay.
There is Semi-Pro, Blades of Glory, B-list Ferrell. And then there's Adam McKay Ferrell. And Adam McKay was the co-writer and director of Talladega Nights and also the greatest movie of the 21st century, Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Scotch.
McKay is back, paired with Ferrell for this film. And he brings it.
He brings it.
You're going to get your money's worth out of this one.
I like hearing it. All right, so John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell are stepbrothers. They've finally decided that they like each other. They're living at home with their parents, even though they're in their early 40s. Here they are asking their mom and dad about bunk beds.
This is a bad time.
What the hell's going on?
Okay, Mom, we think it would be very prudent.
Can we turn our beds into bunk beds?
Yes.
Why are you guys so sweaty?
All right, we've already figured out how to do this. The beds match up perfectly.
And here's the thing. It'll give us so much extra space in our room to do activities.
Please say yes.
You don't need permission from us to build bunk beds. You're adults. You can do what you want.
We can? No?
Yes. Yes.
Sweet.
You can make bunk beds.
I knew it.
Okay, you guys are not going to regret this. We're going to get so much more activities done.
This is the funnest night ever.
Is there a plot?
Sort of.
What is it?
The plot is that they don't like each other, and then they like each other, and then they don't like each other again, and then in the end they like each other.
All right, but it's funny.
It is funny, yeah. What you heard in there, that's kind of representative of a lot of the interplay between Ferrell and Reilly. They're basically playing the same character, too stupid to live, but they're soulmates. Richard Jenkins and Mary Steenburgen play their parents, mm-hmm. and Jenkins was just in a really good movie earlier this year called The Visitor.
Right, very serious movie.
Yeah, very serious movie. And Mary Steenburgen, haven't seen her in a while, but, you know, friends with Larry David, and shows she's a pretty good comedic actress. They give her some Ferrell-esque lines, and watching her, you know, tell body jokes is pretty funny.
All right. X-Files, I want to believe. What is it they want to believe in? Who wants to believe what?
Aliens?
Aliens?
I think they want to believe that you can revive a 6 years dead franchise.
I wondered about that. X-Files, not even on the radar.
No.
Anymore,
totally off
really?
The radar. I don't think Gillian Anderson has worked in about 25 years. David Duchovny is doing that the Californication show. It's an odd time to be bringing back this film. But geek stuff is really, you know, geek stuff rules right now. And the X-Files was at the forefront of that. So I think Chris Carter, the show's mm-hmm. creator and the director here, is gambling that old X-Files fans are going to remember just how much they love the show and pour back into the theaters for it.
And how sort of involved they were with Mulder and Scully, these two agents. Let's listen to a clip from X-Files, I Want to Believe.
Tell me what you see.
I see a face. I see eyes staring out, like through dirty glass. It's out there. I know it.
Scully, what does he mean, like, through dirty glass?
Mulder.
What?
Stop.
Okay, just feel free to give up like everybody else.
This is not my job anymore, Mulder.
No, that's right. That's right. You're just like my booking agent now, right?
You're right. This is my fault.
What do you mean it's your fault?
For getting you involved in this.
No. It was the right thing to do, Scully.
So Scully's gone off to be a doctor. Mulder's kind of fallen off the face of the earth.
Mulder, when we find him, it's probably one of the best parts of the movie. He's David Duchovny in a beard is always funny. And you see him in a beard, and he's that guy who clips newspaper articles and plasters his walls with them. They're no longer FBI agents. As you said, Scully is a doctor, and Mulder sits in his room. And
the fellow with the Scottish brogue is Billy
Connolly, who was the second teacher on Head of the Class.
I see.
Yeah. Also in this movie, Amanda Peet and Exhibit, the guy from Pimp My Ride.
Wow. So is it aliens? Is it a higher power? Is it what are they looking for?
Well, you know, Scully and Mulder are cooling their heels, and then an FBI agent goes missing, and the only person who can find her is a psychic. So guess who gets called?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, Man on Wire. This is, ever since I found out you were going to do this film, I've seen it everywhere now. It's about a French acrobat named Philippe Petit, who seemed like he had a death wish when he strung a 200-foot wire between the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, 100 stories up. Let's listen to him talk about stepping off the roof of the Trade Center.
I had to make a decision of shifting my weight from 1 foot anchored to the building to the foot anchored on the wire. This is probably, I don't know, probably the end of my life to step on that wire. And on the other hand, something that I could not resist and I didn't make any effort to resist called me upon that cable.
Now, that was from 1974 is when he actually did this. But They speak to him now.
Yeah.
Explain to me how the structure of the documentary.
It's a mix of interviews with Petit and also his sort of co-conspirators, his girlfriend, his best friend at the time, another gentleman that he had worked with several times on other projects, and then two random Americans that he hooked up with who helped him, who were very interesting because no one involved seemed to trust them. We have interviews with them today. We have a lot of archival footage of Petit, his other walks, shots of the World Trade Center being built, and also a lot of footage of the walk itself, which comes at the end of the movie. And then we get reenactments. And reenactments can be a tricky thing in a doc like this. And these are actually some of the better ones that I've seen before. The reenactments are all done in black and white. They're mostly silent. There's voiceover happening. A lot of shadow is used. Faces are obscured. And you get the sense... You get a rudimentary grasp of what the scene must have looked like, but without having to feel like they're trying to draw you into a straight recreation.
Is it difficult as a New Yorker to watch the towers? Or what emotion did you have? Or if you maybe didn't, maybe you just watched it as a film critic.
What's interesting about this, about watching the towers in this movie, is you're watching them being built, and they weren't the most beautiful buildings
right
in the world.
Right at the time. Yeah.
But they were this completely audacious sort of thing, and Petit understood that better than almost anyone else in the world. He was obsessed with them from the time that he saw an artist rendering of them in a French newspaper, and the joy that these things give him, it gives you you appreciate that on a very high level, and it's a little difficult to watch, but really it does. It just kind of fills you with a sense of wonder about these buildings, and you're really grateful for that as a viewer.
Now, you obviously know he survived, yet I've heard it described as a thriller. Do you have that sense of something could go wrong?
Or? Yeah, that's another weird thing about this movie is they have to break into the World Trade Center. And this is a process. Preparing for this took years. They were literally planning this for a couple years. They did scouting missions. At one point, he came to New York and with a partner lied to the president of the WTC Association and said that he was a French journalist, and he gave him access to the whole building. He went up on the roof and started taking pictures and interviewing construction workers. They get to the top floor and spend hours hiding from security guards. I mean, it really is... if you didn't know the outcome, this could be a straight thriller.
Daniel Holloway, our movie critic, one of the highlights of our week every week. Thank you so much for joining our little team. We really appreciate it.
One of the highlights of my week.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Dan Holloway, thanks a lot.